You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 78 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show. And on this week's episode, we're going to hear from Ryan States. Well, as the decade comes to a close, it's amazing to look back and see how much the internet has changed the distribution of music. Independent artists have the ability to distribute their music anywhere in the world with very little effort. And as we head into the next decade, armed with faster internet connections and more bandwidth, it's exciting to see the innovative ways artists are starting to collaborate with each other. Entire albums are now being recorded by exchanging files across the web, which has allowed incredible access to musicians who were formerly only available if you were in the right town. That brings us to our interview with Ryan States. Ryan got a job playing keyboard in the circus, which keeps him out on the road constantly, and in years past, many musicians were faced with the decision of whether to stay in town and pursue their own music career or go out on the road and get paid, playing for maybe a theater group, the circus, or at an amusement park, or just another established artist, over staying in town where they can work with other musicians to write, record, and move their personal artistic career forward. Even though Ryan is often in remote locations and makes his home on a train, he's had some pretty amazing musicians play on his new album just by exchanging files over the web. Well, let's get to my interview with Ryan States. Well, joining me on the line is Ryan States. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I think you kind of have an interesting story because you are a professional musician. You're playing with a circus company that's traveling constantly, and you have your living quarters there on the train, and have been writing and recording a record and doing it by collaborating with all sorts of different people all over the country and possibly all over the world. So before we get into all the nitty-gritty details of how you made that possible, let's hear a little bit about yourself as a musician and what you're up to.
Well, I grew up in a really musical family, the youngest of 11, and everybody pretty much played an instrument, and we were active in church playing music, and it's just always been part of my life. It's just something you do. It's not something you necessarily think of as a career type of thing. It's just something you do. I kind of fell into it because, you know, I play keyboards and everybody needs a keyboard player for, you know, as a accompanist or to play for this or that. And so it wasn't really a decision, but I love doing it. And what's exciting about this album is that, it's my project. It's I'm usually taking orders from other people, you know, so this is kind of cool to have something that's my own where I'm calling the shot.
Yeah, and you are on tour, I guess you could say, with playing professionally for the circus as kind of your day job. How did all that come about?
I was going to the University of North Texas in Denton, and I just saw a flyer on the bulletin by the jazz office, and it said keyboard wanted for gigging band, and it was the only flyer that said gigging band. And so those are the keywords, and so I called it. And it turns out the circus was in Dallas at the Reunion Arena, and so it took a while to track down the right number, the right guy, but I ended up talking to the band leader and drove down and met him and hired me on the spot. It was pretty cool. So they needed someone to sub for 3 months, and so I did it. And then later on, I called him back and said, hey, you know, I'm ready to come back full time.
Mm-hmm. So what's that job like? Is it similar to like playing in a theater group, or is it all pretty much orchestrated out every night, or is there a lot of improvisation and just trying to go with the flow every day?
I think there used to be more improvisation, but really we have this really large cast, and it's strange because we get our cues from them, but they grow really accustomed to hearing it the same way, and they want us to play it the same way. So it's definitely, if you're somebody who doesn't want to do that or can't find a way to cope with playing the exact same thing, it's not a gig for you. But it's very similar to playing in a musical, because you have tons of cues, and it's just nonstop, and that's the feel. The difference is that it's a musical pumped up on adrenaline, because sometimes with our show it sounds kind of like the ESPN music, and we don't play a song from beginning to end. We go from cue to cue, and we have vamps, and we have like a final style. So you got to pay more attention, because you have no idea where when the ending is going to come, because the conductor is watching the performer on stage, and so it definitely keeps you on your toes.
Are you reading a lot of charts every night, or do you basically have it all memorized?
Well, yeah, I have it memorized, but I don't know if I should say I do read the book. It's good to have it for a couple of reasons. I have it out because if the conductor calls out a measure number and you need to go to a real specific spot, the guys who aren't looking at the book are kind of depending on those of us who are looking at the book to get something like that, because it happens instantly. But I also let my eyes guide, I'm not really looking at each measure or each stanza, but my eyes are on the book, and it's sort of an eye-to-hand thing, so I can, my mind wanders a little bit. If I'm not using the book, I can't daydream, which is a horrible thing to say. But you have to understand, we're doing 9 shows a week, and, in the course of 2 years, we'll have done this like 750 times, and so it's not that I'm not in the moment, because, I definitely want to interact with the audience and watch them and be into what's going on, and especially for any sort of variation, anything surprising that happens during the show, I definitely want to, be into that. I don't just zone out, Mm-hmm. I do enjoy it, though. I have some fun with it, so it's cool.
Where do they set up the band at a circus? It's probably been maybe 30 years since I've been to a circus, and I haven't seen probably the modern incarnation of how it travels these days. Where do you guys get put in the arena?
Well, it changes with every tour. When I first got here, we do arena shows, and the bandstand was just pretty much as far off to the side as possible, which was pretty cool, because although you can get into some bad habits, no one can really see you, and so you can goof off and pick on each other and pick your nose. No one's going to notice, but not anymore. Actually, the next tour, we were up like 40 feet high on this stage. It was really kind of crazy, because you really couldn't see the floor. We had to use video monitors to do it. So we were like 40 feet high over the portal, and we could like just sometimes reach up and touch the rafters depending on the size of the arena. But now it's ideal. This tour that we're actually in now, the bandstand is actually part of the set, and they can see us. They know we're there. They know it's not canned music. And there's at least dimmed lights on us the whole time, so we have to behave a little bit better. But, and I've seen other shows where they come up with some pretty interesting ideas. But the bandstand is usually near the portal, which is the entrance where all the performers come on and exit the stage. And it's good to be like a fixture where they can actually see you and know that you're there. And that's definitely cool.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I was so interested in your story, and you kind of touched on it already, was that when I was in college, I remember, I studied music, and there would be those ads, like you mentioned, on the wall where it'd say, play for a gigging band, or during the summer, a lot of the music students would go work at an amusement park or something like that. But a lot of the musicians that were there, since we were in Nashville, hated leaving town or felt like they'd be totally disconnected from being able to actually pursue their music career while actually playing professionally someplace else, like, the circus or an amusement park. But now that it's, 2009 and technology has drastically changed and changed the way people can do stuff, you are actually, making an album, collaborating with people while you're out on the road playing for the circus. How did that all start?
It started with the invention of the internet and wireless devices.
Well, for you specifically.
No, I seriously, I'm not kidding around. I actually credited the inventor of the internet in my CD notes, because I started to talk a little bit about how I did it, just figuring out what gear I needed. It was all through the internet, ordering it, just communicating with people, getting critiques on my mixes, learning how to, do the engineering and stuff at a more advanced level, and I think what you're probably wanting to get to is working with the musicians, which was a real trip, because what I was doing for the long distance stuff, I would send out like a track where they could hear like all the ghost tracks and everything that I want in the arrangement. And then I sent them another version without their part, and then they could record to that. And I changed the mix a little bit, take the vocals a little bit down and out of the way so they can hear the more rhythmic elements and track to that. But it was interesting. I used a lot of people I know, a lot of friends. I also found some people on Google. This was before they had websites that were like they have now about sort of connecting musicians and producers and songwriters and stuff, which is great. But until then, it was just me and a couple of friends creating a list in a Word document. And so and just kind of notes of what they can do. And
well, let's back up there a little bit, because, I mean, I think that I know you're on the train. And that's where your sleeping quarters is, I assume, and that's where you have your little studio set up, correct?
Right. Yeah, I have a private train room on the circus train, old-fashioned circus train, and I put in a little bit of acoustic foam. People see it and they're like, "Oh, cool! You soundproofed your room," but there's no soundproofing a train. It's just to control some of the reflecting sounds, you know. We mm-hmm. had, I mean, it's parallel walls and it's all hard surfaces, and so I had to soften it up a little bit. I don't put away all my clothes. I let them hang on hooks. And yeah, I mean, it's just trying to absorb some of the sounds. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know how this happened. My microphone, even right now, is like 2 feet away from this really noisy refrigerator. The shower for the train car is on the other side of my wall, and the fan's getting pretty old, especially this last week where it's like vibrating the wall now. the utility fan is just getting really noisy. And in some cities, if the water pressure is different or something, the water is a lot louder and you can hear that and you can't record that week, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I had some of, you know, there's other, we have 9 traveling musicians, and I definitely took advantage of some of that talent pool out here and had some of the horn players and guitar player come into the train room and record. I did all the vocals right here in this room, and like the microphone is, I have like this large condenser mic. It's like not even a foot from my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not the best conditions, but you try and use noise gates and EQ to get rid of the rumbling. And my standards actually went down, but I don't think it hurt the final product. Like I actually got to the point where I would even record vocals while the train was moving. But I knew what I was in for, and so I deliberately planned the record so that I would just always have loud music happening. There wouldn't, you know, I'm not trying to do some Celine Dion ballad where you need like absolute quiet.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess, do you have Wi-Fi there on the train, or do you have to go into town to get Wi-Fi?
I wish. Everybody wish. Oh, it's just the efforts people go through to get wireless on the train. I mean, everyone's got like these DirecTV things that they put up, and then they got to take it down, you know, twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go through that hassle. I use Netflix for that. But it's cell phones, and I had a PC card for my laptop. That's how I did it for the longest time. And then a Verizon Wireless cut me off. They just didn't even give me a warning letter, or didn't even say, you know, you need to use less. They just cut me off. I was on the unlimited plan for like 2 years.
Oh.
And said I went over the limit, apparently. And and there was a class action lawsuit, so I feel really good about that, because everyone was stuck with this proprietary like hardware.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with now? And they were cutting off everybody at the time. But now I think some of the service providers are a little bit more conservative. But now I have multiple plans for wireless device. I don't even want to say how many, but it's because, you know, I'm running a business. I'm going to remix websites, trying to check out other people's music. I'm downloading tons of music, listening to tons of music, and then I'm putting up stuff. And then, the big thing is when I'm, you know, trading tracks with the musicians making the record, because we're sending large WAV files. And so, like, a drum track could be, like, almost a half a gig.
Yeah.
They're sending me 12 tracks for one song. So, yeah, it's that. That's a real challenge to get the wireless thing. No, they don't provide something like that. That's pretty much we're all on our own for that.
So how did you start approaching musicians to play on your record? I know you made demos on your own there with your computer and were sending things out to people. How did you decide who you wanted to get on there and go about getting in touch with them?
Well, it started, I let the song dictate what that was, you know, I decided what kind of songs I wanted to do, and then I knew that the arrangements, like I said before, had to be kind of loud, and so it just pretty much was just the logical sequence. I went with people that I knew, people I'd worked with before, former circus musicians and current ones. And then I was also really using this album as an opportunity to network and meet new people, because I am on the road. And so I'm sort of in this really small town, this really small network. And so I kind of wanted to reach out, and people who have been with the circus touring year-round long enough, they end up not really knowing any musicians except the ones that came through. And so I really wanted to use this as an opportunity to meet new people. And so there's like four drummers. One I met through a sax player I knew, and the others were just recommended either by like friends or I Googled them. I mean, there were like a couple of people have like websites online and you know, promoting that they do drum tracks, and there's realsax.com, where I used Jim Clark, and he did like three or four parts for one of the songs, and I didn't know him at all. It was totally cool. I mean, it was really kind of exciting, you know. I mean, it's a good time to be a songwriter.
So did you find that most people were pretty receptive to the idea of, you know, just playing on a random album and just getting the tracks by email or through an FTP program?
Musicians, you know, they want to work, you know, and they want to make music, which is really, really good if you're a songwriter. And I found it wasn't, well, I there was a criteria. They had to be able to handle, you know, the recording aspect themselves. I didn't really have a budget to put them in a studio, and so I was really specifically looking for musicians who had their own studio, and sometimes they would go to a friend who had a studio. And but like rhythm section, you know, we already pretty much have, you know, drummers, guitar players, they're already recording, you know, so they're already set up with it. And I did a little bit of research to try and know what I was talking about, you know, like what kind of mics are good for drummers. And sometimes, Brian McRae, he has this amazing, oh man, he's just so hooked up. He's got like the setup he has, everything just sounds so good. I mean, it comes back practically sounding, I mean, it's so easy to mix.
Uh-huh.
And, there was one, you know, drummer who, you know, it was amazing, but I told him like when we, like in the future, we're going to need to go and use like a different studio.
Uh-huh.
He was going to his friend's basement, and it was just like, it just took so much, you know, it's really difficult, especially for me being a new, you know, trying to do the mixing myself, and it's really difficult mixing drums to begin with. And like getting separation from hat and snare was actually the biggest problem, I think, with trying to get the drums recorded right.
Did that end up going back and forth with a lot of different takes?
In that case, not really. I just had to live in a lot of like forums where they talk about mixing drums, and just spend hours and hours just trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to work around. And you know, I hate to say it, but I used Drumagog to use some triggers and stuff. I don't want the musicians to always know what I did. But you know, if the mic wasn't sounding right, you know, or whatever, you know, there's too much bleed, I had to do something. But you know, you learn as you go, and then you know what to tell the musician next time you come through.
Did you find any good resources online for connecting with other people trying to you know, do what you're doing? Hire musicians that they've never met to record music over the internet?
I didn't use any of them, but I've found a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably will use them now. I haven't used them, but I think like Studio Pros, look like they had some interesting vocalists. You know, it'd be kind of cool maybe to get somebody to help you out with some background vocals. Or now I did use realsax.com, and that was but that's pretty much run by a guy who's pretty much just doing like horns and stuff, and it's really, really great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For a song, you know, to not have to program the horns, you know, have somebody, you know, who already has been touring and understands music, who can just lay those tracks down. I think I used eDrum Sessions or Studio Pros. These are things I haven't really tried.
Uh-huh.
But I did use online drum recording, which is this guy Don in the Netherlands who did the drums on track 11, and that was really cool. I mean, I think drummers tend to have their own websites. Let's see, yeah, Drum Overdubs was Brian McRae.
Did you find that it was pretty affordable, and you're satisfied with the end product they gave you?
I think that I was able to get really good prices, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you want to tell them, you know, this is an indie project. You know, it's coming out of your own paycheck. You know, you don't have some record label advance and stuff. It's good to let them know where you're coming from and try and work with them. And people, you know, they want to be involved. They want to, you know, play. Musicians want to play. And so I was able to, you know, get it. The price has varied a lot. But it's doable, except with this project, I was trying to use multiple musicians on every single song, and so it added up. And for a guy who's just doing a record out of his little train room, it was really expensive for me. But I'm not saying the musicians were expensive. I mean, it was the biggest expense, but it's not like they were overcharging. They certainly weren't getting what they were worth, not even close.
Mm-hmm. But do you think you'll do this again on your next project, just kind of collaborate online like you did for this one?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know. I don't want it to take 3 years, and so I'm going to have to keep costs down. I might do more playing more of the parts, do more of the multi-instrumentalist thing, and maybe just use one or two musicians per song, and that way, it's a community I love being a part of, and so I want to do that. But if I'm writing too many songs to only release a record every 3 years, and so, you know, so I'll do it. But I think I don't know if it's going to be as big of a project as this one, and I didn't intend it to be like this, but people were really supportive, and they were like, oh, this is really good, and so it just kind of got bigger, and so it became a bigger endeavor.
Well, it does make for an interesting story and helps get some interest for your music, knowing that, you know, all these players, especially some of the really well-known players that were able to contribute, and that you did it all from your train room there on the circus tour. Did you have any mistake stories or things you learned while through the process that next time you won't do again?
Yeah, there's a lot of mistakes. You know, I mean, some of the things I bought, you know, I ended up not using or not needing. But I had to repurchase a lot of stuff just because of the train movements. And a lot of gear isn't really designed to withstand the conditions out here. So there were things that I had to, a lot of the equipment had really short lifespan. I had to keep just repurchasing the same stuff.
Did your computer hold up pretty well on the train, or is that one of the things that ended up getting replaced?
It got heat damage. We had some problems keeping the train air conditioned, and so I did have to get it repaired. But I'm really, really pleased with my Mac, and I'm not one of these, you know, like cult Mac fans. I only switched because, I was looking at what the producers that I really admired were using, and I looked at the software that the DAWs they were using, and I was like, well, that only runs a Mac, so I guess I'll get a Mac. And it was a real easy transition. And at the time, you know, I bought this 3 years ago, and at the time, PC wasn't even making any portables that could do this. And I definitely put this, I definitely overworked the computer, and I used every technique and every workaround. I mean, some of these songs have 60, 70 tracks, and so I would be freezing tracks and bouncing things down, but I didn't want to lose control over being able to mix individual parts, and so it was really, really slow process because I don't have a faster system. But it's insane. I can't believe I did this on a Mac computer on a laptop.
Wow.
Yeah, I have like 5 external hard drives connected to it. Ridiculous.
Well, before we close out the podcast, do you have any good circus stories for us?
Oh, like the poop bucket? Yeah.
Yeah, for those who may not have heard that episode, you did call in once with a phone comment probably over a year ago, and that was very entertaining. But
well, you know, it's a barn. You know, it's an animal show, so, you know, there's going to be poop buckets.
Yeah.
when I first got here, I remember, I guess it was after SPAC or something, the elephants went by us. It was like his finale, maybe, or I don't remember what it was. This was a long time ago, but they ran by, and I guess they were breathing heavy, and so like some snot came out. I didn't know what it was, but it hit at least 3 of us in the band. I had no idea what it was. I really washed my eyes out really good after that, because I'm like, what is this?
Well, your new album is up and available on CD Baby. Is there a particular track we could play so everyone could hear what your final product sounded like and hear how that collaboration came together?
Sure.
I might play track two, Immigrant.
Okay.
That's the full title, right?
Very cool. All right. Immigrant, Fish Out of Water.
Okay. All right, well, we'll listen to that right now, and I appreciate you for being on the podcast, Ryan, and feel free to keep sending in your comments or your emails, because they're always very entertaining.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, thanks, man.
I was stopped by the Texas State Patrol. Didn't like the sound on my radio. Guess you never heard a heat wave. Do you like my shoes? Do you want to trade? I was told by a man on the clock that it's not good to be so soft. He didn't approve of the love I made. Said that I was lost and he was saved. Sometimes feel like a fish out of water. Times forget I'm not from here. The spirit longs for a much larger world. Been waiting for like 5 years ago. Made a vow with my co-conspirator to immigrate up north together. Said we give up all our lust if we let another year get the best of us. We'd be where the dreamers go, lose ourselves in the world capital. Now he say he gonna make it in singer. He got another place with another singer. Ooh, sometimes feel like a fish out of water. At times forget I'm not from here. The spirit lost from much larger world. That I would not do. I may love someone, though it's not fair. But I still don't know if I'll ever get there. Don't quit my job for my sanity. Wake up tomorrow, I'll be 70. But hey, it's just another year. By the way things look, I'll still be here.
Song called Immigrant, Fish Out of Water by Ryan States off his new album that he recorded from his train car on tour with the circus. If you're interested to hear more, I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode. Also, I wanted to remind you that we have one episode left before we take a break for Christmas and New Year's, and that episode will be a roundtable edition of the podcast. So that means we love to get your feedback and share it on the show, especially your phone messages. So if you'd like to leave us a message, go ahead and call our listener line at 206-426-5683. And you can find that phone number also on the podcast website at cdbabypodcast.com. Another option for you is to leave a comment in the show notes for this episode or a previous episode. And then if you want to email, we accept those as well. It's just info@cdbabypodcast.com. We love to get your thoughts, comments, feedback, your success stories, your mistake stories, anything you'd like to share or weigh in on. We like hearing from you, and we like to share it on the show. So we'll be recording that in a couple days, so be sure to get them in early. Well, that's going to do it. We'll catch you next time. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.